Actor Colin Farrell has been in some dicey situations on screen where he's got to make a decision in his career. But here's a new one.
I understand this discussion is a little unpleasant for you, but it is my duty to prepare you psychologically for all possible outcomes. Now, have you thought of what animal you'd like to be if you end up alone?
Yes, a lobster.
Why a lobster?
Because lobsters live for over 100 years, are blue-blooded like aristocrats, and stay fertile all their lives. I also like the sea, very much. I water ski and swim quite well since I was a teenager.
I must congratulate you. The first thing most people think of is a dog.
In the new movie Lobster, that's about the first and last reference to the crustacean you will see, Farrell has to pick an animal because in a world where people are required to reproduce, you've got to find a romantic partner in 45 days or else you get turned into the animal of your own choosing. The film won the jury prize at Cannes and opens today. Trapped in this world, director Yorgos Lanthimos wants his characters to explore new forms of desperation, longing, and eventually true love. Colin Farrell stars as David, John C. Reilly as his friend, and Rachel Weisz as the woman who will force David to make a choice. Farrell told me he embraced the insanity of this world quite naturally.
David is completely in acceptance and accordance with his environment, even if the environment is in agitation or even if things aren't going his way. I don't want to say he's somnambulistic, but he is towing the party line, and it's a very particular system that David and the rest of the cast of characters in this film live within and beneath. I mean, I loved the situation and the dynamic of the world that was created and the logic of the world, as outlandish as the rules of this world that the characters inhabit in the lobster seems, as outlandish, there was a perfect kind of logic to it, every single bit of it. So while it felt absurd at times in reading it, by the time we got to doing it, it felt like we were just, you know, enmeshed in the status quo of the story. And I had seen York's work. I had seen Dogtooth and I had seen Alps. So I knew that he was a director and a writer who kind of operates beyond the pale.
Do you feel this is a redemption of romance in the end?
Romance doesn't want to be redeemed. romance is beyond redemption. It exists in some kind of flightier place than where redemption resides. I think it's a story about, you know, I don't know what it's about, but one of the things that you could observe is that even under the stricture of this world and even as oppressive as this kind of social, almost political, almost religious system is that everyone lives within, that love does find a way, you know, as awkward as that love may be presented in this film between myself and Rachel's character.
So Yorgos, you're just a softie. This is a smushy film.
Yeah, I always saw it as a very romantic film, a romantic comedy even.
I mean, in a way, this is a metaphor for being single in that, you know, you get divorced and if you can't find somebody, you do recede into this set of personality characteristics that could almost be described as a kind of animal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, socially, they're, you know, I have friends who I have heard stories directly of friends of mine who have been kind of at various stages, and it's not too common, but a couple of times through the years, who have been stigmatized by being single, that were in a kind of a social dynamic that involved a heavy amount of couples sharing experiences, going on holidays, having dinners and all that, and then there was a breakup, and this is the person I heard it from, and there was a kind of a stigmatization there, and they were excluded from further experiences. And there's also a personal stigma that we put on ourselves and a pressure that if we're not sharing our lives with somebody at times, that there's something wrong with us or that we're missing out on, you know, a really important aspect of the human experience. And while that may be true, and while this film isn't particularly trying to poke holes, I don't feel, at anything or judge anything, it's just presenting a lot of different factors of what the human and the communal experience is in a variety of our communities around the world. Those kind of suspicions or those kind of social bents are given a very particular structure in the form of, yes, either find a partner or we will turn you into an animal.
Yorgos, are the animals a form of sequester?
Well, the animals for us, it started, you know, as just trying to find relatively positive punishment for people that were single and never made it, to find someone, you know, then it becomes many other different things for people. And yeah, it just depends how you see it.
How did the world get to be this way, Yorgos, in your imagination?
I think, you know, we never came up with the world as it is. It was just a process trying to figure out, you know, what kind of structure would help us explore the themes that we wanted to explore. You know, so starting from an idea, you know, what would happen if, you know, single people were taken somewhere to find a mate and you're not allowed to walk around free in our society. Then, you know, we had to fill in the details of what that world would be, discover the rules, and so on.
You know, what I love about this film is dystopian settings in the movies have become so banal that you expect that there's going to be some sort of dystopian setting, that when we get to your premise, it just seems so fresh that it's like, oh, that's the real dystopia.
That's why we're trying to avoid, you know, such characterizations, although I guess in the beginning it was us who first called it a dystopian film. But I think, yeah, it's not really a dystopian film. It's a world very much like our own.
Which is dystopian in itself.
Yeah.
We're in dystopia, kids.
And it has a pretense of good intentions, and the world tries to present whatever is happening there in a positive light. So that's why it's quite different from the cliche dystopian world that we are aware of.
Do extreme situations that are Kafkaesque like this, you know, the turn into a bug when you wake up in the morning kind of idea that is sort of floating around in this film, Colin, are they fun to do as an actor? The more outlandish and ridiculous it is it more fun or more challenging or both?
I don't think that the separation from reality is as experienced as an actor as it is as a viewer. You know, I think by the time it gets to the viewer, there's ideally a complete sense of this world is presented, and whatever absurdity or ridiculousness may be in there in a film like The Lobster or in a story like Metamorphosis, the audience or the reader get to participate in that. But as the creator, as the writer director, I mean, Yorgos can speak for himself, but as one of the actors, you know, you see behind the veil, and it becomes a practical experience. But having said that, there were moments in this film that were so outlandishly and also kind of sweetly odd, whether it was kissing Rachel in front of Lea Seydoux's character's parents as they were playing the guitar that time, or kicking the little girl in the shin that time to prove that I didn't care, or whatever it may be, that there was a couple of times that I found the oddness of it incredibly affecting, aka I laughed out loud and broke characters, they say, and all that jazz. But no, the experience of it was, I mean, I just fell in love with the world. I really did. And I fell in love with, as violent as it is and as oppressive an experience the majority of the characters are having, I just fell in love with what I think is a kind of unusual and inherent sweetness that we arrive at by the end of the film.
It sounds like it made you feel more human.
Made me feel less like a lobster, yes.
Like that. Yorgos and Colin, thank you so much.
Thanks a million, man.
Thank you.
Actor Colin Farrell portrays David in The Lobster, written and directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. The film is out today.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.